This is Danny and Gallant on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Streaming nationwide on the 710 Sports app and 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Try to put on the show.
There are ways to apologize, Paul. There are ways to address systematic wrongdoing. There are companies that have a great deal of experience dealing with scandals, and I'm pretty sure nowhere in that handbook of apologies is a response in which Jim Crane, owner of the Astros, quote, this is from Brian McTaggart, who was covering a press conference this morning, Jim Crane, quote, our opinion is this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that, end quote.
I mean, obviously, you got to believe him. Clearly telling the truth here.
Of all of the different things that I would have expected from their press conference this morning, and the Mariners, or the, I'm sorry, the Astros. That was a terrible slip up. The Houston Astros had a press conference this morning with Jim Crane, their owner, their new manager, Dusty Baker, which you have to wonder why the hell he was up on stage. He's like, I didn't have anything to do with this.
What a terrible, what? Like, first official day on the job. I mean, come on.
Although, to be fair, Dusty's the coolest man in sports.
He is.
If there's anybody that could be, like, I completely, like, look at it like, dude, that's just a man trying to pay rent. Like, he's just up there. It's what his boss told him to do. He's showing up to do the job.
It's nice to have an affable person up there to be distracting. And maybe they thought that he could serve the role of, like, the Fonz jumping the shark. You know, you get the attention away from the actual matter at hand.
And also up there were Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, who read statements. We'll have those for you. But here was Jim Crane when asked specifically why the players who are left, the players who are still on the team, the players who were on the team in 2017 when the trash cans were being banged, signals were being stolen, just all around no good, up to no good players, stealing signs. And here was what Jim Crane said when asked why you're absolving the players.
Well, the commission report was very thorough, and they did a lot of work on it. Where the commissioner came down, which I agree with him, is that it could have been stopped, and it wasn't stopped, and people had knowledge of it based upon the report. So we hold those two guys accountable for what happened and not stopping that action.
One of my first interviews that I ever did in sports radio was actually with Jim Crane in studio with us when I was in Houston. This was back in 2011. This was right after he had purchased the team, moved them to the American League. And I remember being struck by how very careful and meticulous he was when we asked him specific questions about pretty much anything. And he was constantly looking at notes and sort of relying on what was written. And he's doing it again here. And it's so, I think, honestly, a waste of time what they did today, because they didn't say anything. We didn't learn anything new, and they didn't help themselves out in any way either. Basically, now they have just given themselves up to the baseball world as a pinata. People are going to have their fun with them today. They're going to have their fun with them over the next couple of weeks. And we didn't learn anything new, which I think is the most disappointing part of all. And I think for some reason we thought that that was actually going to happen. We would learn, oh, well, this is who was involved. And yeah, the players should have gotten a little bit more of the blame. Nope. He is trying to bury this like all of baseball is trying to bury this.
Here is Alex Bregman, one of the Astros' top players, a guy who received MVP consideration last year, on what his statement of apology. Did not take questions. He read a statement.
I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
It's not a terrible apology. Like, he doesn't skirt blame. Blames himself. Says that he'll focus on doing better. It's not any sort of explanation, and there's really not a mea culpa in there, but that's not a terrible apology.
Does he sound sorry? Could you hear it in his voice, Danny?
It's so
I heard a guy speaking slowly.
You wanted wailing. Oh, I'm so sorry.
I mean, he was doing it three words at a time. Does speaking more slowly during an apology make you seem more contrite? Because I did not hear it.
Of course. It absolutely does. It adds weight to your words. It makes it appear as if you are incredibly solemn. Even if you're thinking to myself,
that's the vibe.
Those World Series shares still cashed and I still got a ring, suckers.
The solemn, that's the key word there. He does sound very solemn.
He has proper solemnity for the occasion. Do you want to hear Altuve?
Yeah,
we all love Altuve, right? It's hard to be mad at little Jose. It's really hard to be mad at little Jose.
I'll be perfectly honest. Like for me, as someone who covered that 2017 team, for me, this is really hard. It really is because I really enjoyed that team. They won the World Series at a really important time after the hurricane. But, I mean, there's no denying what they did. You can't skirt around it. There's no way to do it.
There are 2,000 bangs of a trash can that speak to exactly how pervasive it was.
Exactly.
Here's Jose Altuve.
I also will be brief. We had a great team meeting last night. And I want to say that the whole Astros organization and the team feel bad about what happened in 2017. We especially feel remorse for the impact in our fans and the game of baseball, and our team is determined to move forward, to play with intensity, and to bring back a championship to Houston in 2020. Thank you.
I've heard enough Jose Altuve over the course of my career covering sports to know when he does sound sad, because he usually sounds very chipper and upbeat. Oh, he was definitely really sorry there.
Here's a quote from Tyler Kepner, the New York Times reporter, and he says, quote, and this is from Jim Crane, "These are a great group of guys who did not receive proper guidance from their leaders," end quote. I don't know if this is a trial balloon or if this is what they've decided on, but it's very clear that the damage control that the Houston Astros are partaking in is to say it's the fault of the guys who didn't stop the players from doing this. It is to cast blame on people who are not there, which you totally understand from a business perspective. Like, I totally understand. And what the latest thing is that Carlos Beltran was the godfather who came in there in 2017, El Jefe, and he demanded that their sign stealing get up to industry standards. He steamrolled all these younger players who were like, I don't really know about that, Carlos. It's like, look, I'm a Hall of Famer. You're going to listen to me. This is how we're going to do it now. And they're like, oh no. So they were bullied. I mean, that's essentially the vision that is being, or what is being reported out, whether it's by the Wall Street Journal. I don't buy it, frankly, but that's going to be clear. Are they floating to see if, like, hey, will they buy this? Will they leave us alone if this is what we offer up?
They want everyone to just stop. They're not going to. You can't, because the players had to be involved. I understand that when people are in a position of power, it is sometimes very difficult to question them. And I can understand the dynamic of the Astros clubhouse at the time, which was a lot of, for the most part, young players that had not really been through a whole lot outside of a series against the Kansas City Royals in the playoffs. Who are they to speak up against someone like Carlos Beltran, who has been in the league for a really long time and who some of those players probably looked up to, and who was a guy who was a really key force in making both the white part of the clubhouse and the Latino part of the clubhouse actually, like, get along? Because a lot of times those are separate parts of the clubhouse. He was able to bridge the gap. And I wonder if they looked at him and they were like, okay, well, who am I to question him? But the funny thing is, we heard that one of the biggest hardos in sports, Brian McCann, who is big into just doing things the right way, McCann questioned him. McCann questioned Beltran, but he didn't do it enough, clearly. Seems like McCann's the only one right now that you can look at and say, okay, maybe he gets a pass here, but everyone else, they did not stand up hard enough.
If we go ahead and sort of roll forward from that, that means that McCann's next to be vilified, because anybody who tried to stand up but failed to stop it, they're the ones that are actually getting in trouble. It's an interesting dynamic that's going on. I'm very suspicious of any attempt to share blame on people that goes outside the organization, because I look at that, whether it's true or not, as just being so convenient. It's so convenient to say, is Carlos Beltran, who at that point is at the end of his career, is he really the one that was most adamant about installing a system that benefited other guys most? It was other guys that benefited most from that. And so I look at it like it's very convenient. Doesn't mean it's not true. That's possible. And that's how it happened, and that was his contribution. It's also very convenient for an organization to paint that picture because it doesn't – it in a sense sort of recharacterizes the guys who are still there, the guys you want the public to cheer for, mm-hmm. that you want people to vote for All-Star Games as – they're almost as much of victims as the rest of us of this plot, and now their accomplishments have been overshadowed. I think it's interesting, and maybe, Paul, maybe as we talk about it, this is what a heel turn looks like. This is what it looks like when an organization decides, okay, we're going to wear the black hat, is that your owner gets up there and says, like, well, mistakes were made, and we're moving on.
We have two men of great character leading our baseball operation. James Click and Dusty Baker will help our players and our entire organization deliver a competitive team on the field and continue our commitment to Houston and make them proud off the field.
Do you ever listen to Mike and the Mad Dog? Mike and the Mad Dog, they used to play in the background like when a statement was being read, essentially like the battle hymn of the Republics, to make it seem... gives a little extra to it because it clearly you're reading a mission statement and it's almost like it's propaganda. Wow. Congratulations. You have two new people in power that aren't going to, you know, step over the line and then step over it some more. Awesome. That does not make up for the last couple of years. And that's, I think, the big problem that everyone is struggling with right now. What happened, happened, and ultimately the consequences for the Astros is not that they lost any players, it's not that there are any suspensions for any players. You lose a GM, which is hard to replace, and a manager, which is easy to replace. That's it. Slap on the wrist.
And you lose a lot of public respect. The only thing missing from that, and I would have liked it more, if Jim Crane had said, and we'll win the World Series in 2020 with nary a trash can being banged to prove everyone wrong. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to tell you what to watch for.
What to watch for every morning at 7:10. Brought to you by Dubin Law Group. The first look at the stories worth watching today with Danny and Gallant.
That was pretty fun. Everybody needs to know that was a decision we made to tackle that subject about 4 minutes before the show started.
Really, it was very last minute.
We were planning to fix sports. We're going to have to fix sports a different day. Greg Olson, tight end, visited the Seahawks yesterday. In fact, we had an eyewitness who was on the flight with him from Atlanta, waiting on word whether he'll sign with the Seahawks. He's already visited Washington and Buffalo.
Look, it's of all the potential destinations, it's the one where he has the best chance at winning. It's the one where, just based off of how Russell Wilson's numbers deteriorated after the injury to Will Disley, where he definitely would get touches, he would definitely get receptions. I doubt that Will Disley is going to come back 100% right away with that Achilles injury that he's coming off of. This is the best situation for him if Greg Olson wants to continue playing in the NFL. And I think right now, I don't know if the Seahawks continue to try to recruit him. You got to convince him that this is a better opportunity than going into the booth.
That's really who you're competing against.
Right.
Isn't that weird to say?
Yeah.
It's not the Buffalo Bills. It's the broadcast booth at this point. We'll see how it goes. I think he'd be a great addition.
What to watch for?
Well, Washington played USC in the second game of its Pac-12 season, beating the Trojans by 32 points and improving to 11-4. They've gone 1-8 since then, entering tonight's game against the Trojans at 6 o'clock. Danny, what do the Huskies do in this game? What's going on here?
Well, apparently they got to burn their boats, isn't that?
Burn
isn't that
the boats. It's the new Mike Hopkins slogan. I love it. It's in reference to the Minnesota Vikings, to the Vikings of the Middle Ages, who when they would go invade, the raiding party would burn their boats because that was how strongly they were convicted.
There was no turning back.
Exactly. And they could rebuild the boats. That's how honestly incredible the Vikings were. They would just rebuild the boats perfectly fine, and there was no problem with their long ships. But that's what he's saying right now. You got to burn the boats. You got to go full speed ahead. You can't have any half measures out here.
One of my favorite things is our favorite local columnist, Matt Calkins, has a column today in which he says that, yes, most people think that the only way the Huskies win get into the NCAA tournament is by winning the Pac-12 tournament. But actually, if they won the rest of their regular season games and then won a game in the Pac-12 tournament, that would get them to 20 wins, as if winning 8 straight games is easier than winning the Pac-12 tournament. The easiest way for them to get in is to win the Pac-12 tournament. And maybe right now, maybe the only way.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they're and I doubt they win tonight. Honestly, with the way that they've been playing recently, there's just something's missing. I don't know if it's Quade Green. I think it's they just don't want to play defense.
They're gonna play better before the end of the season. I think they'll win tonight.
What to watch for?
Well, I'm supposed to tell you about Taiwan Walker re-signing with the Mariners, and that did happen. He's going to get $2 million, and we'll see how he can reclaim his career after Tommy John surgery. But really, I want to play more Jim Crane sound of the Astros owner saying stuff like this.
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
What the hell? Didn't impact the game.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's what we're going to leave it.
Are you kidding me?
They're cheating reality. Like, he didn't just say that.
That's incredible.
That takes some doing. It's Danny and Gallant. It's time to bring in John Clayton for the morning drive.
John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
It's a four-way battle, and there's only going to be three spots. Somebody has to go.
The first and final word on everything NFL from the professor, John Clayton.
Presented by Infinity of Tacoma at 5.
They scored 30 points a game. They're the best running team in football.
It's John Clayton's Morning Drive with Danny and Gallant.
Professor, good morning.
Good morning.
Are you going to buy Colin Kaepernick's memoir?
No.
Not interested at all? Come on.
Not really, no. I don't know. It's just, you know, I cover sports, and that's more politics than anything else. And so not interested in reading it, not interested in looking for it, not interested in purchasing it.
I'm going to read it, but I'm interested. But you're right. This is going to be more politics than it is sports. And ultimately, I think the story of Kaepernick's, what appears to be the end of his NFL career, is almost entirely a political story as opposed to a sports story. What's interesting about this, it's going to be released through Audible, but it's his own publishing company. And I felt for a while this is probably where we're next going to hear from him, that he is going to sell his story, so to speak. I'll be interested to hear it. I can't imagine he ever plays a down in the NFL. I think that tryout he had last year, John, I think that was the last gasp of it. This is my theory on what happened. There was a team that was interested in signing Kaepernick, and what they wanted to know was, if we sign him to be a backup quarterback, is he going to come in here and play football, or is it going to be an opportunity for him to talk about how he's been locked out of the league for the past couple years? And that question was answered very specifically, and that team never had to go through the process of gauging and asking him those questions. The league provided the cover for that. Do you think that might be what happened?
Could be, but again, I think what when you look at it first, I mean, you know, Pete Carroll was one of the most aggressive in looking at Colin Kaepernick. Mm-hmm. And when he came out here, we don't know the details of the conversation. I mean, all Pete basically said was that, he seems to be more interested in playing. And right now, you know, Russell Wilson's the quarterback. And so it seemed like he wasn't willing to do the, to be not the backup, but, you know, hoping that he was going to play. And of course, if you're going to be a player like Colin, you want to be able to have the opportunity to play. Then, you see in the last year, I mean, he had conversations with the XFL and he asked for a ridiculous amount of money and they weren't going to do that. And then the workout thing I thought was just horrid in the sense that, I mean, here you had, 25 teams that were interested. And then at the last minute, you pull a move and move over to a place where most of the people didn't even get to. At the last minute. So, yeah, it just seems like he's more interested in his story as opposed to his career.
Seattle Dragons head coach Jim Zorn said he's been absolutely shocked by XFL broadcast access. I've enjoyed it. I've really enjoyed these awkward sideline interviews after a player screws up. John, do you think that there's any chance that NFL broadcasts will incorporate some of the things that we have been seeing with this iteration of the XFL? Because with the last one, we did see them take on some of those parts.
Yeah, I don't. I'd like to see some of it, but again, I don't think the NFL would do that because, again, I think in the case of the NFL, I mean, they've already they want the because again, this is so good for the XFL because it's so interesting. I mean, you learn so much about the game by listening to what the players are saying, what the coaches are doing, all those different things. But no, I think that you know, the NFL broadcasts are going to pretty much stay the same, where it's just, you know, you're going to see the play. They may try to do a few more things, but I don't think too many more things.
John, Jameis Winston got LASIK surgery to correct nearsightedness. Now, I think people should know it's not like things were blurry for him right in front of his face, but it's harder for him, and you'd see signs of him squinting or pictures of him squinting on the sidelines. What kind of market's there going to be for him? He's scheduled to be a free agent, right?
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good market. Again, I don't know what the number's going to be, but he's really talented. And I know I said it last night, calling it 30-30 vision because he had 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
So it's professor.
Yeah, but still, I mean, the guy has, you know, you look at it two ways. It's like, okay, the 30 interceptions kill you, but he also has the ability to throw for more than 30 touchdowns. And so it's not that he's eliminated right now in Tampa. I think they're still thinking through it, but they still might go a different direction. But, you know, let's say, for example, you know, if they don't make a change with Derek Carr, I could see maybe the Las Vegas team trying to look for him. So, no, I think that he'll have a market.
I wonder about Andy Dalton on that front as well. Where do you think he ends up, John, and how much would he cost? Because the Bengals are actually talking with Dalton about potentially putting him in a place where he's going to feel comfortable.
Well, I mean, if Tom Brady leaves New England, I think that that could be a possibility. I could maybe see Chicago, Tampa, if they move away from Jameis Winston. I think there's going to be a pretty good market because he has an affordable contract. I mean, you know, he makes pretty much now half what the rest of the league quarterbacks are making at the top, and I think he can still be a good quarterback. So I think there'll be a good market. I think you can probably get him for like a Joe Flacco price, maybe like a fourth-round pick, maybe a third-round pick.
Professor, I'm not sure if you saw this. It is the most interesting piece of news in my mind, though, is that a proposal to alleviate the pain of cheering for pro football in Ohio has gone up in smoke. A medical committee made the joint decision that failure to reach the Super Bowl is not grounds to light up a different kind of bowl. Bengals-Browns fandom insufficient to warrant the use of medical marijuana in Ohio, John.
Well, I guess it's tough. I mean, when you got the worst team, Cincinnati Bengals, and you got one of the worst franchises in the Browns, I mean, yeah, it's like their seasons have already gone up in smoke so many different times that now poor fans can't get the benefits of trying to, you know, get some relief.
Who would you rather be a fan of if you had to pick between the two teams? Because the Bengals are cheapos, but with the Browns, you've got a team that like just seems to go out of its way to rip the hearts out of its fan base, including leaving town, fumbling at the one-yard line, giving up 99-yard drives to John Elway, and then completely disappointing everyone. If you have to pick a fan between those two teams, who would you pick?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, I don't have to pick them because I'm not a fan.
I'm making you pick them, John.
No. I guess if I were a fan, but of course, I'm a reporter, so I can't be a fan. But I would have to say you'd probably lean toward the Browns because there's a more of a lasting legacy. You know, at least they did have success back in the 1960s.
There's a nobility in being putrid and historically futile, like just being merely bad. Like there's a nobility in truly being like, not only if you're a Browns fan, have you suffered that long? You watched your franchise get moved to Baltimore, where it's then won two Super Bowl titles with an entirely different name. You've also had to watch Bill Belichick, whom you ran out of town and they called Garbage Bag Bill in Cleveland. And people were sick of Bill Belichick by the time he was done. He's become the greatest Super Bowl coach ever. Like, it's truly... It's a noble failing to be a Cleveland Browns fan at this point.
It really is. And, you know, you go there and just your hearts get ripped out just about every year. I mean, look at last year where everybody was talking they were going to win the division. Maybe they're going to be a Super Bowl team and all that. And they just were putrid because they had hired the wrong coach, you know, Freddie Kitchens. And so now we'll see if they can bounce back. But that's the Browns. I mean, that history, it just keeps going over. That's why I guess you can say that the Bengals right now we're the worst, and then you have to say maybe that the Browns have been the worst franchise.
Professor, have you ever been at a press conference where you've heard two things? This is Jim Crane, Astros owner, addressing the scandal, the sign stealing code breaker this morning. Here's the first part he said.
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. You know, our opinion is you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. we won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Merely minutes later, John, merely minutes later, he's asked about saying it didn't impact the game.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
So you've left it at two different areas where it didn't impact the game. Well, we don't know if it didn't impact the game.
Yeah, he said it didn't impact the game and then said, I never said it didn't impact the game, when he clearly did. It's pretty fun. Professor, we'll look forward to hearing your reaction to that at 10 this morning, and also news on Greg Olson and his visit to the Seahawks. Thanks, Professor.
Thank you.
Professor John Clayton is with us. Well, coming up, the Seahawks offensive line is in a very precarious place. Why didn't Jermaine Ifedi live up to his first-round potential? We'll do that and maybe wade into more of a code-breaker scandal with the Houston Astros, who apparently don't know how to dig themselves out of this hole. It's all ahead on Danny and Gallant.
You are listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
Yeah, the Astros did see the signs. They also heard the trash can that was signaling the signs. And they apologized for it this morning. And, oh boy, Danny O'Neill, this was not a successful press conference for them. And you know what? I look at what happened, and I just have to wonder, what were they thinking going into this? What did they think they were going to accomplish by holding this press conference? Because they're the laughingstock of baseball for at least the remainder of today, if not longer. Everyone can't stand them. They were not going to change their mind based off of the press conference with apologies, because there are people in Los Angeles that think they needed a World Series, that think they won a World Series in 2017 because the Astros cheated. There's people in New York that think the same thing after losing in the ALCS to the Astros. I really am struggling to think of what the Astros thought was going to happen for them here, because ultimately I think they just got pantsed.
I believe this might be evil genius at work. Maybe this is Jim Crane. I'm going to make myself such a buffoon that I'm going to take all of the pressure off of my players, that I'm going to turn myself into a caricature. I can't imagine a really successful, this isn't just an average guy, like a really successful businessman deciding, like in his heart of hearts, like, what's the best way for me to really get people to understand where we're coming from and to be excited about Astros baseball again, and saying, well, maybe it'll be something like this.
Listen, the Yankees have had a few comments out there. You know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
Okay. That should settle it, Paul, right?
We'll leave it at that, yeah.
Everybody, yeah. What? Nobody's going to jump on the idea that, what, you said it didn't impact the game?
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
And at the very end of the press conference, Marley Rivera of ESPN bodied Crane. I mean, this is fantastic follow-up question work, and they actually had to end the press conference a little early, it seems.
Oh, really? It was the walk-off shot?
Oh, yeah.
Like, she delivered the headshot, and then they had to carry the body out?
Let's listen to it, actually.
So how is it that it doesn't affect competition?
Uh-oh.
So how is it that it doesn't affect competition? So then what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter, so doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Dusty. Thank you, Jim.
She just put him in a pretzel.
Get a body bag.
It's over.
Carry him out.
And look, is anyone sitting here right now thinking to themselves, you know what? Good for the Astros. I feel better about what they did. There are some things that I think that,
yeah, maybe they got they skirted around. They got nothing done for their own sake here. They just embarrassed themselves on national television, and like, this doesn't help you out in any way, shape, or form going forward.
No, it doesn't. I would say, are they going to make a statement that, hey, this is the last time we're going to address this? Because that's the only function that I think having a formal gathering like this could serve, is like, hey, this is it, get all your licks in, and then if you look like an incompetent buffoon, or you have to have your PR guy end the press conference for you, yeah, because you've just been said, like, isn't what you're saying fundamentally ridiculous? I mean, that's what Marley Rivera's question was, of like, look, we're talking about a vital piece of information being relayed to a hitter before the pitcher throws the ball. Of course that's going to affect competition.
Yep.
It was basically like, what you said is patently ridiculous. And he's like, yeah, maybe you're right. And then they're like, okay.
All right, let's get out of here.
The press conference has to end right now because the whole charade. And if the one upside was, this is the only time we're going to do this, I could see there being a benefit, because I don't think there's any way for the Astros to win the press conference today. I don't think. Because even if everybody just gathered around and fessed up, like, here's how it worked, here's who was most supportive of it, here's who was least suspicious, even if they told the 100% God's honest truth, there's still going to be people that are going to want players punished, who are going to wonder whether the World Series title should be vacated. Like, there was no win for it.
Right.
It does seem like this is the worst possible response, though.
Yeah, maybe that's cathartic for some of the people that feel like the Astros got away with murder here, is that they just were embarrassed in front of everyone. It was essentially a public flogging, but people are only going to want more. You know, this is just the start. This is, nothing's going to change here. I mean, honestly, the only way that the Astros could have won this press conference is if they had somebody set up a trash can in the press conference room so that Jim Crane would be aware of the questions that he was about to get. So you're going to have, like, signs for, like, oh, this is going to be a confrontational question, and all right, that's two bangs.
Boosh, boosh, boosh. Here comes the fast. It's a brushback pitch. Yeah. Hit the deck, Jim.
Here's a softball question about Dusty Baker coming. Just one hit on the drum.
Lost in the backdrop of this was a piece of news from last night in which Bob Melvin, the A's manager, said that he formally complained to baseball. Because that's kind of been sort of a question that circulated around, is like, why didn't other teams complain about this? If everybody's been knowing it's been going on for several years. And Melvin basically said, I did. We were sick of it. We knew what was going on. Lots of people knew what was going on. And we formally complained. And this is before Mike Fiers. Mike Fiers was maybe, for all intents and purposes, still on the Astros when this happened. And the upshot of that to me, Paul, is that if you want something changed in baseball, you can't try to work within baseball, because they would not. We've known for 2 years that there's something hinky going on with sign stealing. Players have obliquely talked about it, even in sometimes saying directly, hey, something's happened. And baseball never took care of it until they were publicly humiliated by a story in The Athletic saying, here's how it was happening, this is what it went on, and then that resulted in change. That's the only way you get them to change is shame.
It was an open secret in baseball, what the Astros were doing. Other teams were doing this to a lesser degree as well. The Yankees, definitely. The Red Sox, definitely. Like, those teams were definitely doing it. They just maybe weren't using trash cans, which, again, man, that's just such a funny dynamic of this story, and it never will stop being one. But, yeah, you're right. And this is something that, you look at Rob Manfred, this is fireable. I mean, why does he have a job right now? And you know, you can try all these cute little rule changes to maybe distract people right now, and re-releasing these press releases of things that we knew were going to happen to maybe get people off of your case, proposing different rules to change baseball's playoffs.
Hey, look, new playoff format.
Right. But, I mean, Manfred looks like the weakest commissioner in sports by a wide, wide margin. And considering Roger Goodell is often the pincushion for all of the NFL's problems, the owners are like, all right, dude, you just take the blame here. And that Gary Bettman's been such a mess in the NHL. Like, that's really saying something. But Manfred looks like a complete boob right now. There's no, I think, actual positive thing that can be gained by continuing to have him as commissioner. This looks so bad. They knew about this for years and did nothing about it. And how do you not learn from your past commissioner, Bud Selig, who did nothing about steroids, which everyone knew about in baseball for such a long period of time? It just looks weak.
I would say this, Paul. I think it's a symptom of the modern day commissioner. I think the modern day commissioner almost by definition is weak because he, more than at any other previous time, he's less powerful than any single owner. He's less powerful almost by definition. He has to like placate all these guys. And I don't think he could. I don't think Jim Crane would have let him be able to throw the book at his team. And I think that you'd meet resistance. I think it's a symptom of how powerless modern day commissioners are.
Yeah, that's a fair way of looking at it. I mean, you just go back to, when was it, 1919, the Chicago Black Sox scandal. And I think, I want to say the commissioner, and I don't know how I know this, was like Judge Kennesaw Mountain Landis.
Landis.
Which is such an imposing name. Like, I wouldn't skirt the rules with someone named like Mountain Landis as his
Bowie
last
Kuhn.
Name.
But Bowie he, Kuhn? Bowie Kuhn was an absolute dictator.
Was he another
well,
commissioner?
A little bit later on, yeah.
Okay.
It was the mid-century.
I mean, you need the dictator.
You need a strong name.
Yeah, you need a strong arm. And look, this is not helping anyone out. Like what happened today? Baseball looks worse because they stood by and did nothing by it. The Astros look worse because they just got pantsed on national television with an unnecessary apology that was not going to change anyone's minds.
So what would you say you're apologizing for, Jim?
Oh. Fantastic. It's Danny and Gallant. He is Danny O'Neill. I am Paul Gallant. I'm actually curious as to what you guys think were some of the worst attempts at apologies in sports history.
That's a good one. There have been some bad ones.
Text them in to 710-710. This is something that we can take a look at over the course of the morning. It's something that we will be talking about as well all morning. The Astros, so, so sorry. Speaking of sorry, could the Seahawks potentially be sorry about the state of their offensive line in a couple of weeks? Very dangerous situation that they're entering. We'll explain it to you next. Danny and Gallant.
You're listening to Danny and Gallant.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Danny O'Neill and Paul Gallant.
We're going to have Brock Heward with us, Blue 42. He's got some things to ask about. We've got an eye open for any news regarding Greg Olsen, whose visit with the Seattle Seahawks, if it hasn't already wrapped up, should be wrapping up this morning. Find out a timeline for when he might be making a decision. But the news this morning is that the Houston Astros held a press conference, and I wouldn't even say it was necessarily to apologize, though that was the purported purpose. But owner Jim Crane, new manager Dusty Baker, two players, Alex Bregman and Jose Altuve, appeared before reporters. The players read statements, and this has turned into the Jim Crane show. Because Houston's owner, depending on how you would really look at it, has either embarrassed himself or taken all of the attention off of his players by claiming that it didn't impact the game.
Yeah, and man.
There, you know, our opinion is, you know, that this didn't impact the game. We had a good team. We won the World Series, and we'll leave it at that.
I mean, leave it at that. Come on, Danny.
Except 55 seconds later, he's going to have to explain that why stealing signs and knowing what a pitcher was going to throw, how that possibly didn't impact the game.
Jim, when talking about the Yankees there, did you say you feel like this didn't impact the game? And what do you mean by that?
I didn't say it didn't impact the game. Basically, you know, as the commissioner said in his report, he's not going to go backwards. It's hard to determine how it impacted the game, if it impacted the game, and that's where we're going to leave it.
Well, you said you were going to leave it at that a little bit earlier. So
that's never going to be an approach. That's the McGuire Congress approach, right? When McGuire was there, I'm not here to talk about the past. Right when he stood there, and Rafael Palmeiro probably came out the worst because of how defiant he was.
Yeah, he lied.
If you're going to be defiant, and Lance Armstrong is the quintessential example of this. If you're doing something bad and you double down on it by being defiant about being accused of something bad, and it turns out you actually did the something bad, like you're done. Like that's it. You're probably not going to be able to. No matter what you can do, all you could ever get back to is a point where people don't curse when they hear your name. They're never going to think well of you. Saying we're not here to talk about the past, that's never going to be an effective strategy because that's not going to get you out of the hole either.
No, it's not. Again, this is a lesson for all the people that are looking to enter sports PR. Here's what you do. You can try to clear your conscience with a press conference. Guess what's going to happen? Nothing good. release a statement and go mute. That's the only way I think that you don't get around this situation. It's going to live with you forever. The apology does not make it go away, like me saying excuse me to my parents after tooting. It's not. It doesn't just go away and never can be addressed again. That was a Gallant family rule.
Really?
Yeah. If you said excuse me, no one could. It was okay. Harass you for having made the air foul.
Now the next chapter of it is that the storylines that have started to emerge. What the latest one is that Carlos Beltran was the godfather of. He was El Jefe. He was the guy that basically bullied the younger players into stealing the signs. Am I summarizing it correct,
yes,
Paul?
Yes, 100%. And I like that he is being made a scapegoat in this form.
Hey, let me tell you what over here. You're going to bang the trash can once. You're going to bang the trash can twice.
But Carlos, I don't want to bang the trash can. That's against the game.
I'm going to make an offer you can't refuse, young man. See this bat right here? I got an offer. It's going to hit you sort of right in the side of the head. You're going against me again.
You can act like a man.
You can act like a man. What's the matter with you?
Except Carlos Correa isn't getting on board with that explanation. He was asked about it in the Astros clubhouse just earlier today, and he's not buying that at all.
Whatever he said and whatever we're doing, we had the chance to stop it as a team. Everybody had the chance to say something, and we didn't. So whoever the anonymous source is that's saying that we felt intimidated, we were too young to say something, that's just straight up bullshit. Beltran didn't intimidate nobody. Beltran's the nicest guy. And I know in Puerto Rican people say, oh, he's just trying to protect him. But you can talk to every single guy here that was in 2017. Beltran is an unbelievable gentleman. He's a straight up gentleman. And nobody, not even you guys, nobody will feel intimidated by his presence, by his leadership, and whatever he has to say.
I don't think he understood the question. It's not.
Oh, I think he totally did. I think he totally did, and I think basically what he's saying is that storyline is false, and it's smearing Carlos Beltran, and he likes Beltran, he's not going to sit there for it.
Maybe, but I think he's thinking that Carlos Beltran was doing what I just did in that little reenactment. Like, he's going up to players, he's like, oh, you're not going to take the signs? Here's a baseball bat, you better fall in line. Like, I think the idea of Carlos Beltran just being an intimidating presence, like, this is a guy who's been in baseball for 20 years, and all these guys are young whippersnappers, and to say, oh, yeah, we got to stop doing this. You can be intimidated by someone like that. I mean, you're basically telling the captain that who has been there and done that, like, no, this needs to stop now. I think that is a difficult thing for a young player to do.
There is another part of that, though, where he talked about him as a leader, saying that he taught them baseball.
The thing I have a problem with is when I read that report is that we were scared of him or we felt intimidated. We didn't feel scared of Beltran. We felt intimidated. He was the nicest guy that we could ever have. He was the best teammate we've ever had. Beltran was obviously a leader of the clubhouse, but we all had a say in everything.
They're adults, and I guess that's what I took away from it, and the reason that I'm skeptical of the idea that if you try to blame it on AJ Hinch for not stopping it or blame it on Jeffrey Luna for what he set up, every one of those guys in that dugout is an adult. And how many times do we talk about competitors as being alpha males and all of these sort of things? And all of a sudden, when it comes to gaining information that would give them an actual edge, that there's a rational reason that they would want it, they're like, oh, I don't know. Maybe it's. I could see how otherwise moral, sort of right thinking, want to do the right thing people make a series of decisions that leads to what was happening in the Astros clubhouse. What I don't see is that being forced on anyone. I see them making their own justifications for why it was okay, as opposed to like, nope, this is just how you do it.
To pin it all on Beltran, you're right. That is what they're trying to do right now, and at least with these leaks that are coming out. And to Carlos Correa's credit, he was saying that some of that is BS. I do think that it is hard, though, still, to speak up and say, this strategy that you're bringing to the table is the wrong strategy, especially when the results are what they are. And maybe it's not intimidation. Maybe it's just like respecting your elders. I don't know. I mean, that would be great spin zone for the Astros PR. We were respecting our elder veteran player. We were just listening to what he was advising us to do. And they felt nervous about going against it. But ultimately, they all made the decision that it was fine. Honestly, given the results, can you blame them?
And I'm not saying that that is something that is necessarily the right thing to do. I'm saying if you were in that person's shoes and all of a sudden your entire team is smacking home runs and everyone's hitting over 300, are you really going to...
Let's all bag the trash can!
Seriously. I mean, if you look at their batting average for, like, all the players in 2017, I mean, just about everyone was batting over 300. Like, that... Seven players in your lineup with averages that are in the 300 range? That's insane in today's baseball.
It's Danny and Gallant. We're going to have Brock Heward join us next. It's very possible that Richard Sherman is in charge of the Houston Astros apology construction. That's one thing that actually makes sense. If he's like, oh, I never said that. Well, 55 seconds. Nobody has any tape of that. It's Danny and Gallant. We'll bring in Brock next.